Ready.
I'd like to call the September 13th, 2019 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 9 a.m. And we have roll call, please, Ms. Holland.
Dr. Kasagis?
Present.
Dr. Jones?
Present.
Dr. Moffett?
Present.
Dr. Lamb?
Here.
Dr. Mastodis?
Present.
Mr. Evanoff, noted absent. Mona Baskin?
Present.
Margaret Whalen?
Present.
And Paula Hollins is here.
Thank you very much. I'll start off with reading the board meeting statement of purpose as told to us to be read by the governor. A license to practice optometry in the state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. That is a long sentence. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrist and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1st, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. And I'd like to welcome everyone to the meeting, especially Dr. Mastodis for the first meeting as a state board member. Ask all the questions you want. There are no stupid questions unless, of course, they come to the person to your left, from the person to your left. And welcome on the Friday the 13th with a full moon, so it should be an interesting day. So we will move on. Review, discussion, and possible action on investigative reviews and complaints. We're going to go a little out of order only because we have some of those people here. So we're going to skip number one and come back to it. We're going to go to number two. Walter Klein, OD, IR number 202001. Someone would like to...
I can summarize this. Patient LM was at the office, said that something was being sprayed in the air, Lysol, and went home that evening, woke up, it was swollen, eye was red, went to the ER treatment, and is concerned that wiping down with alcohol is not working and that they need to sterilize the office.
Okay.
Do you want me to go into with the doctor?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
I believe the patient is here.
I am.
Okay. Would you like to come forward and introduce yourself? Just because we'll let you
come forward to where?
Right at the table. Have a seat. If you'd like to give your name for
initials, please.
Oh, my initials LM.
Yes. Yeah, and this is if you want to speak, you. This
yeah,
is
this is where you say
yes.
Your side of the story before we start talking.
Oh, well, I'm the one that wrote what you just said. I mean, I went for my normal eye exam. I was following the doctor because he was at a different location, so I went to a new location to get my eye exam. I was the first patient of the morning, and I just kind of noticed that, I don't know if it was the doctor, but somebody's going from room to room and just kind of like sanitizing, and I thought, oh, maybe that's just like what they do on a regular basis. So I had my eye exam, it was a Saturday, I went back home, went to bed about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I tried to wake up and open my eye, and it was just swollen shut, and it was more pain. I mean, I was an elementary school teacher for 16 years, for goodness sakes, and I recognized pink eye, but when I woke up, I thought something was, like, seriously wrong with my eye, so I had my husband take me to the emergency room, and they ended up giving me the drops, and I was pretty much out of it for, you know, until I healed up from that, and when I tried to contact the office, she just basically said, well, we can't do anything, you know, and I thought, if people are going in there, like, from Saturday, I think they were closed on Sunday, anybody that went in there would have been, predisposed to picking that up. I mean, I know some people are more susceptible, but she told me they wipe everything down with alcohol, and I thought, well, maybe, because I didn't go anywhere else. I don't know where else I would have got pink eye. How ironic it's when I go to get my eye exam that I'm trying to get better eye health, and I end up with, you know, an eye infection. So I've been upset about it. So I don't want to go back. I had my husband go in and pick up my glasses, and I'm not happy with them, but I won't go back in because I'm not going to go back into the place that I feel is where I've, you know, I got sick when I went in there. So I'm going back to my old glasses. I'm not wearing my new ones, and it keeps reminding me of that every day. So here I am.
Okay, thank you. What we'll do is we'll begin, we'll talk about this, and then if we have any questions, we'll begin asking. Have a discussion.
Well, the doctor says you're spraying Febreze, not Lysol, or that you responded. Unfortunately, there's no way of telling.
Well, no, they sanitize with alcohol. The right. Febreze is something I guess that she must have seen them spraying where you're
right.
spraying
she's
it.
Yeah, but it was Febreze, not a disinfectant. There's no real way to connect this, unfortunately. It seems really coincidental that it happened the same exact night, but those sort of things are available off doorknobs and your loved ones and anything, grocery store handles, and I'm sure those are much worse than a doctor's rubbing his, cleaning his place with alcohol. So if there was a definite connection, I don't know, it's and I'm sure the patient is convinced that there is a definite connection. I just don't know how
sure.
we can.
No, like she said, it's
she teaches and she never got an infection and then she goes to eye exams. But
if I had gone anywhere else that day, but I didn't.
Thank you. If they have questions, they'll ask you.
It is difficult, but I guess the first thing I would ask is, they says they sanitize prior to each patient. And you saw them spraying the Febreze. Did you happen to see them wiping down the instrument? Well, you're the first patient. You might not have seen them wiping down the instruments because
I was in the waiting room. Yeah. That's why I just saw somebody going in and out of the patient.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's important that we do it in front of the patient. Then there's no question.
Well,
but,
that's true, too.
But I don't know that that's
and the other issue is that, at least when I used to work, alcohol was not considered enough of a disinfectant. You had to use one of these, like, toxic wipes. We had to put gloves on.
I worked at the hospital, right, for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And we had to do, we had a whole infection control department.
Right.
And so we would have to write each equipment, go through and say, how does the equipment specify how this is supposed to be clean? And a lot of times it is just alcohol wipes.
Is it? Well, like I said, we used to be overprotective of stuff, so
yeah.
I don't know. But again, I don't know how we can draw the exact conclusion. If there was a raft of patients that had gotten eye infections that day, that would be, or even one other patient, that would make sense. But
I agree that it's difficult to prove that that's the way it happened. However, I just believe in fairness to the patient and the protocol.
Maybe we should.
I can make a motion, can I?
You sure can.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion that a letter of concern be sent to the doctor stating that that protocol needs to be followed, and preferably in front of the patient so that they know you did it.
I would second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Now we can discuss further.
Yeah, no, I mean, the doctor needs to be made aware that the patient may have gotten an infection and that the doctor needs to be, there's busy days where you don't, you're running from room to room, you're not sure what the heck is going on. So he needs to be, what is that? He needs to be, a letter of concern is what I would suggest to him.
Anything to say?
No, I agree.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Call.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll just for the
okay.
patient's benefit.
Please.
I'll say that a couple of comments. One, I work in a practice with a lot of, infectious disease that can come in, and you don't always know when someone else has a contagious issue, and where they sit and what they touch. Those things can reside in the chair, in the waiting room, in other areas that you touch without the doctor's knowledge. And sometimes people pick up infection in places such as that. The other issue is that I personally had a patient come back that had never had a problem before and came back with what appeared to be an eye infection, And then the following year, I had the same experience and realized that they were having an allergic reaction to something that had been used in the office. And it just seemed to come out of nowhere. The patient had never had that experience before, and then did have that experience at a subsequent visit. So sometimes, although, and the ER will call lots of things a pink eye or a conjunctivitis, that we don't know if it was necessarily allergic, viral, bacterial, or what the origin of the infection was. So there's a lot of question about where it comes from and how the patient contracted it. So that's my contribution to the conversation.
Thank you. So we'll call the question. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Lamb?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
And I vote aye, unanimous. So we will be sending a letter to the doctor explaining what happened and what they should be doing in the future. So thank you for coming in today. And now we'll move on to number four, Tina Kassler, OD, IR number 202003.
Go ahead, John. This one's so simple to explain.
So, patient TK, basically, from what I read about this concern is that she was upset that the prescription wasn't done correctly the first time, and then when she came back in to get her eyeglass prescription redone, that she just wrote down and didn't actually do a re-exam, and that she didn't get what she paid for at the end. She didn't have a working prescription, and
The patient too is requesting money for the exam and never got it. Is that true, or did the patient finally get the money for the exam? I can't tell from all this.
I don't believe so.
Okay, so basically the doctor doesn't refund the exam fee, refunded the lenses fee, didn't do a re-refraction, although I don't know. The patient was overplussed in their left eye. A second opinion.
She did do a re-refract.
She did?
She did do a re-refract, yes she did. It was at a second request for a re-refract that there's a dispute that one of the office personnel told them that she wouldn't see her again. So she did do one re-refract, and she also did a contact lens follow-up, readjusted the contact lens trial, and it was at a subsequent request for a second re-refract that she was told by office personnel, that's what the patient purports, that she would not be available to be rechecked for a second time.
Okay, we have both the doctor and the patient here, so if the patient would like to come forward and state your initials.
Just for the TH, good morning.
And if you could give us your part of the story.
Okay, in a brief as summary as I possibly can, I've been going to optometrists for probably a decade. I've never had a situation where I've gone into one and they have, on the first follow-up visit, told me, "I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do for you." And that's exactly what happened in this situation. I wear trifocals at work because of computer, trifocals on my normal day and bifocals at work. So my need that day was to get a prescription for trifocals. Typically with doctors, it's, you know, set one prescription and then the bifocals come second. This particular time I opted to attempt contact lenses also. So there was an additional fee on top of it. I'm someone who fights for the principle of something, even if there's no personal gain, and I'm a firm believer that it never hurts to ask, so I appreciate your consideration in this situation right here. I completely believe that it is not acceptable or professional for a doctor to turn around and charge you a fee that they do not supply what you're there for. I mean, in optometry, you go in, sometimes, especially for me, specifically wearing a trifocal and a bifocal, and then at this point in time also contacts, there's going to be adjustments that need to be made. Okay? The doctor on the very first follow-up basically said, you know, I can't help you. And I took a pair of glasses off my head that was a 2-year prescription and handed them to her and said, then check this prescription because they work almost perfect for me. She disappeared out of the room. She went and checked something. I actually thought she was going to check the prescription. She rewrote a prescription when those lenses came in and I picked them up. I still couldn't see out of them, you know. I would think that this board, as well as any other human being, would understand that when you go in and you pay for a fee for something like that, that you expect to walk out of there with a prescription that works. I've been to 10 other doctors probably in the decade that did exactly that. So I'm bringing this to your guys' attention because I think that it's totally unprofessional if the simple fact that she has in fine print of some of her stuff, that the exam fee is not refundable. I completely believe that this is just a rip-off artist, for lack of a more professional term, situation that she didn't have to do anything and she was able to keep the fees for both the prescription lenses and the contacts. We never, ever got a prescription correct because she refused. So I couldn't get my bifocal prescription, nor could I even address her on the contact prescription, which we never even addressed, and she refused to set up another appointment for me.
So when you went back the first time and she said she couldn't help you, that was with your glasses, not the contact.
That's correct.
Were you refunded the money for the lenses?
I was, yes.
But not for the exam?
That's correct, and that's what I'm here fighting for.
And is there a document stating the exam fees will not be refunded, right? Somewhere?
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
So, and the patient's basically overblessed in her left eye.
But right now, do you have any questions for the patient? Because if not, the doctor's here, we can hear.
No, she didn't get the
thank you. You might be back. Okay. If you could have a seat.
Certainly.
And if the doctor would like to come up. Now, Dr. can't state your name.
Yes.
Okay. Hello, I'm Dr. Tina Kassler. I'm Dr. Tina Kassler.
Thank you. Now,
you're my turn? Okay. Yeah. I hope I remember everything. So, I did see the patient twice. The first time she came in, the way it was presented to me was that, she's a 54-year-old hyperopic patient, and she presented on the verbal case history that she changes her prescription annually. And then on her written case history, she wrote that she did not like her current glasses. So when I auto-refracted her, she came out much higher plus. When I refracted her, she came out higher plus. And so based on what she told me was happening and based on the results I had, it made sense that she was higher plus. I also put the matching, the left eye, which is the main complaint, when I put the contact in that has that same higher plus, she sees 20/20 out of it. So she sees 20/20 in the auto, or in the phoropter, she sees 20/20 in the contact lens. So at that point, everything makes sense to me. I write a refraction, or I write a prescription for both glasses and for a monovision contact lens fitting. I really didn't realize until I got the complaint, because I did see her for a second visit, but it wasn't until the complaint that I realized that she was a hyperop that doesn't adapt. If I had been presented with that, because in the letter it says, basically, I've been to other doctors, they've had to recheck me, and I like my old glasses at this point, even though in the first visit it was, I don't like my glasses and I change annually. In the letter it's, I do like my glasses and I don't feel like there's been any change. Had I been presented a 54-year-old hyperope with those complaints, I probably would have been a little bit more hesitant to give her more plus, but it wasn't that presentation, it was I'm changing annually and I don't like these glasses in the initial presentation. And so everything makes sense. She sees 20/20 in the glasses, she sees 20/20 in the contacts, she's got these complaints that tell me she's supposed to be changing. So then when she comes back and she doesn't like it, I do, but she makes it sound like I did nothing on it, but I did re-refract her and I did refit her with contacts at that time. And she says I said I couldn't help her, but I absolutely never speak to a patient that way. So I can't imagine I would say, I can't help you, and then give you, then turn around and immediately write her a prescription for glasses and a prescription for contacts. It doesn't make sense why I would say I can't help you and then turn around and help her within the same 5 minutes. So.
Is it just possible that could have been miscommunicated as far as she's trying monovision?
Yes.
It might have just been you saying
monovision's not going to work.
This
yeah.
is the way it is.
Well, I probably would have been. I'm always very good at educating somebody who's going mono or bifocal contacts that this may or may not work. We need to see, especially mono. Had I known she was a non-adapter, again, which I find out in the follow-up in the complaint letter, but I don't know she's a non-adapter until then, I probably would have been a lot more hesitant to do a monovision contact lens fit on somebody like that. But I don't know that. I'm going in thinking she's changing every year and that she has a complaint with her current prescription. So, also, and then the complaint that I refuse to see her again, that is not our standard policy at the office. Our policy is that the first follow-up is no question, no charge, any time within the 60 days she can come in for a follow-up visit. If they need a third visit, which is like never, but if it happens, what the staff is supposed to tell the patient is that we don't know what the fee will be. We need to discuss that with the patient or with the doctor. So there may be a fee on the third visit, usually not, but I just don't want people to think that they can just come in like every 3 weeks and come and have a coffee with me for a new exam. There needs to be a purpose for the exam. And if there is a purpose, then there would be no fee for that. So I'm not sure if she misconstrued, there may be a fee for that visit, for we won't see you, because absolutely she could have come.
Excuse me a second. Whoever's on the phone, can you please mute the phone on your end?
Hello?
Dr. Hollenbach or Dr. Moffitt?
Dr. Hollenbach here.
Can you mute your phone, Dr. Hollenbach? Yes. We're picking up a lot of your office chatter.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Somebody.
I'm sorry.
Just mute your
phone. Dr. Hollenbach, this is Margaret Whalen. Can you mute your phone because we're picking up your office chatter on the speaker?
Okay.
Thanks. We'll be with you in just a second.
So on exam number four. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. How do I do that?
There should be a button on your phone that says mute, and what that does is it allows you to hear the meeting, but it mutes all the background noise that's going on your end, so we don't have that into the recording and into our meeting so that the board can dialogue with the doctor. It should be a mute button. All right, thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right, no worries. It happens. Thank you.
Okay.
So could I say one more thing before you start off?
Yeah, let's just make sure that we're good here, that we can all hear. All right, thank you kindly.
Okay, so I guess I just want to say, I believe my numbers are correct, but I believe, and we're talking like a quarter diopter here from old to new, or half diopter or something like this in the total sum of the right left eye, but I believe she's a hyperope that doesn't accept full plus. And so it was, if I would have known she had had trouble in the past, I probably would have been more hesitant to give her less and given her less plus right from the beginning, and it wouldn't have taken so many steps to get to that point, but I was presented in a different way. But I really do believe the numbers I gave her are correct. It's just that she can't accept full plus, which happens sometimes with hyperopes.
So, on the exam on 4819,
that's the second one.
There's a old glasses, there's a current glasses, there's a refraction.
Yes.
To 2020, and then there's something about a toric, which I cannot read.
The contact portion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And I'm assuming this is OD and OS.
No.
On the toric?
No, I switched her to mono, so that was the right eye.
Okay, I understand that, but I'm looking at the left eye and the changes. And the left eye is the problem here, obviously.
I think so. I think so too.
I'm just looking at going from 175 then to a plus 225, and then why does it say now she's plus 2 down here in the left eye?
No, that is a right contact. Those are
both of those
right
are?
Contacts. Yes, you can see the axis is 70. Those are. I was switching the right eye to a distance contact.
Well, I understand that, but why does it say trial frame access OS-103?
Okay, so sometimes when somebody's having trouble with their access, I'll throw it into a trial frame and then have them rotate to tell me where they like their access.
But that's left on your record.
Right, so you've they're all written in a row, but we've got a contact portion above a glasses portion there.
You guys see what I'm talking about? That the jumps around? You have the exam in front of you?
I do.
So right there before, below the little eyeballs, the...
Yep.
Okay, so it says, what does it say? Something of...
So bioaffinity toric.
Oh, bioaffinity, okay, I'm sorry. So it says +2, -1.25 x 70, and it says +2, -...
Yep, so I was able, if I dropped the cell, I was able to get her to 2025 versus 2030.
So this is all in the right
eye, because she's happy with the left contact. I'm switching the right eye to distance. I guess
it doesn't make a lot of sense, but I didn't do the exam.
To not switch the left one that she wasn't complaining. The left one was 20/20 in the distance, so she didn't like monovision. So we were.
Well, I understand her not liking monovision. That takes a lot of getting used to. But I thought that this was. I just was wondering. I thought this was ODOS on here, and the contact lens for the left eye was what, +2, -75.
Was a +250, +250, -125 at 80.
It just confuses me. That's all.
Left eye was the distance eye in the monovision.
Correct. Originally. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. And there is a document in here about exam payments not being refunded, right?
The bottom line is the fact that the patient feels that she paid for a
exam,
a contact lens exam, right. and she got neither.
Right. But it's a money issue, right?
Had to go elsewhere to get the proper prescription. And so if someone else could do it, why couldn't it happen the first time? So why should she have to pay for it? Which we've heard numerous complaints about this over the years as far as when that occurs. And it is obviously, now I do have one question about the dispute with Square. So.
Oh yeah, the refund.
You had it taken away when the dispute was brought up. And then it was reinstituted, then they gave it back.
I don't know if they ever took it away, I'm not sure.
Well, I thought that they had taken it away and then they resolved it in your favor and gave it back.
I think they never took it away, but they told me if it failed, then they would.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, they might have told the patient they were going to refund it, I think. Whether they ever did, I don't know.
But nonetheless, the reason for the dispute was the customer claimed goods or services were not received. Status is we're happy to report that your customer's bank resolved this dispute in your favor on July 1st, 2019, which means that it being resolved, Square let the doctor keep the money. And I'm assuming that is correct because she wouldn't be here disputing it if she got her money back.
I questioned it too, but yeah, I agree with you 100% on that.
I'm listening.
That is in the history there, the dispute history with the credit card company. They resolved in favor of the doctor. So
right.
There's paperwork to that effect.
Right. That's what I was reading there.
Okay.
Yes, Dr. Kessler, I have a question. When I reviewed this, so there was the first exam, the patient was charged for it. There was a second exam, and the patient was not charged for that one?
That's correct.
Okay, all right. So it's the first exam that the patient wanted the refund for. Okay, but the second exam, there was no charge.
Correct.
All right, thank you.
And technically, if the patient had decided to, let's say, come back a third time, as you said, if there was reason for it, there probably wouldn't have been a charge. But the patient chose after two strikes, didn't want to go for the third strike and went elsewhere. Is that true? Where if someone comes back the third time, what would have happened?
I would have rechecked that account.
Okay. For no charge?
Correct.
Was the patient told that?
I wasn't part of any other conversations after, so I don't know what the patient was told. but the policy is that the first one is absolutely free. First of all, in 60 days it's free, and then if there's any additional needed, that it would, it's decided upon.
Well, that might make your patient stay away though, right? You say, well, there may be a charge. You may not want to come in for a third strike.
Absolutely, but we could have, they could have, somebody would have at that point approached me and said, are you going to charge this patient? And I was never approached that person.
Okay,
well, I was never asked to do a third. Or
when you say you were presented with information about the, was it the patient themselves that we were saying, you said, I was presented with this information. Are you, is there a breakdown between communication between Walmart and you? Is that what's happening, or?
Well,
you stated that you were never presented with this information the way it...
Right, so the patient didn't call me on the phone and Walmart never approached me.
Well, the patient must have called Walmart.
I don't know, because I was never given any information from anyone beyond that.
But ultimately, I mean, we've all...
Over plus people.
Well, besides that. But we've all seen patients that we've had back once, twice.
Three times.
Contacts, four. I mean, it goes on. And yeah, I can appreciate you saying you don't want to continue on, but we've all gone past three, I can guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah.
As far as trying to get things done. Because when you, if we all have policies that say that we're not going to refund an exam because we've taken the time and the time for the second and the third and the fourth to try and get things right. And in this case, and it's always confusing to the patient only because they paid the money, they didn't get something for it, they had to go somewhere else to get it. And as bad as it is to say, it's basically an issue between the doctor and the patient that has to do with money that we really don't have
jurisdiction
to get in the middle of. Because that is not going against statutes. And it creates a problem for us because a patient is unhappy, but it also puts us in a position where have the statutes been violated in doing this? And in more cases than not, they haven't. It's just an unfortunate situation where things didn't work out right. Would you agree with that statement based on your experience on the board, Dr. Lane?
Yes, I would, 100%. And it's not really fair. The patient's in the dark, and in this case too, maybe the doctor was in the dark. And unfortunately, they don't communicate, and you know, things get misconstrued. But yeah, I learned a long time ago about things like this, that I just refund the money, but or else you're sitting here. But I don't believe there's a statute violation associated with this claim. It's just, I think there's a communication breakdown between the doctor and maybe Walmart, between the patient and maybe Walmart, and then those two never meeting.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Does the board have any concern that Dr. Kessler is not independently managing her practice?
Well, that's why I asked her.
I think that's what you were getting at, Dr. Lamb.
About communication. Did Walmart talk to her? Did the patient talk to her? She says no. That's an issue right there.
I personally don't think there was a violation. However, that doesn't mean there couldn't be. I mean, the excuse that Walmart doesn't tell me isn't an excuse. If that's the mode of practice you choose to have, and that is the first, because I have no idea if the employees are yours or Walmart's. If they're yours, then shame on them. If they're not, then somehow you have to be, you have to set the standard that if a patient has any complaints, they have to come to me. I mean, not the patient themselves, but you have to hear any complaints your patients have. Otherwise, the excuse that you didn't hear is moot, in my opinion, only because you're the doctor and they're your patients. Just because you happen to be in a different practice modality doesn't take away that. So I would actually like to do two separate things. And the first thing would be, I would like to propose a motion that there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Do you want me to second that for discussion purposes?
Sure.
Okay, well.
So we have a motion and a second.
And would that be a motion to dismiss?
That would be a motion to dismiss, but wait, before I sit, then say, can I come back and say something about communication and a letter of concern resolving going forward?
No.
It's kind of part of the same thing?
It's either one or the other.
Okay.
If you find that there's no violation, there could be a motion to dismiss, and you've had discussion on the record regarding the importance of communication between the patient.
I withdraw my second.
I withdraw my motion.
So my motion would be that we do send a letter of concern to the doctor who's seated at the table, that although there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act, which will probably make the patient unhappy, that there is some major concern regarding communication in her office with her current practice style, even though she's been there forever and stuff like that. Somehow, there's a communication breakdown between this patient who's having a problem and this doctor, and we don't know where that broke down. So the motion would be there a letter of concern regarding communication between her leaseholder and herself regarding hearing every complaint that comes through the pipeline.
Okay. Before I have a second, Dr. Lamb, are you stating that you are finding that there is not a violation?
There is not a violation.
Okay.
However, then I can't issue a letter of concern.
All right. Then I would ask you to withdraw your motion for just one moment, and I would just like to advise the board what the standard is for the letter under 3217.44. And what it states is it under E, if the board determines that a reasonable basis exists to believe that a violation of this chapter or rule adopted pursuant to this chapter has occurred and the violation is not sufficiently serious to warrant disciplinary action, it may send a letter of concern to a licensee. So the prerequisite of a letter of concern is that you do believe that a violation has occurred, but it doesn't rise to the is not sufficiently seriousness to warrant discipline.
Well, then aren't we kind of between a rock and a hard place on this?
Not really, because you can still do the same thing and just say what would be the statute. It would be it's not negligence, it's basic communication with a...
that would need to be identified by the board.
Now we go to our... And it's basically... help me out, Margaret. How am I doing?
You'd want to look under ARS 3217.01.8. Under unprofessional conduct, letter possibly letter
1701-8?
Yep, 1701-8.
Right, it defines unprofessional conduct.
Possibly G, any conduct or practice including incompetency.
Well, that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of the patients or the public. So that means that it has to be conduct that constitutes danger.
I hate to be an idiot, but are we using the new law thing that you just put out, Margaret?
Pardon?
This is from the new law.
Yes.
Okay. That you just gave us today.
Correct.
Yeah, where's it at? I don't have it. 32 what? 1701?
Well, it's like page 2. It's like page 5, I should say.
Five, yeah, right. Yeah, end of 5, like...
Okay, I got
433.
Unprofessional. Okay, I'm sorry. Right.
I'm in my old law, but this hasn't changed, so...
Yeah. I'm saying I have two laws now. We got a new one today, and we have the old one and stuff. And I... Charging a fee not rendered. That doesn't really apply.
I thought there was something in there about patient communication or...
in the unprofessional conduct law?
I don't know that this falls under that, does it?
Well, that's kind of the biggest one that we, you know, look at. There's varying degrees of unprofessional conduct.
Because if this has to be the way it goes.
This has to do with, splitting fees, fee splitting and HIPAA violation, basically, is what this is. I don't know how that applies to front and back office communication.
Mm-hmm. or we can't assume that just by having this conversation, the doctor has heard the message.
You've stated it in the record.
Even though we could assume that that was the case, because I mean, I can't go with any of these.
Yeah, it's not
under professional conduct as far as, because none of that really happened. I just think a better job needs to be done communicating with patients. But outside of that, it's like I said, it's a money issue that we can't get in the middle of.
That's for the patient's benefit, that we can't get all of the money.
Right.
But we can emphasize the doctor, she may need to reevaluate.
So knowing we can't do a letter of concern, we can go back and do your motion, but just...
Yeah, I know, but isn't there anything where this...
I don't believe so.
We need to redo our law again.
I make a motion that we dismiss this case on...
Lack of violation.
I second.
Okay, so there's time for discussion, right? So you should have learned a lot by this case.
Yes.
Your patient is still unhappy and will always be unhappy with you. And your communication with the patient is foremost, not with Walmart, not with whoever, that patient is it. Okay, she's the one. And when they come into your office, you need to tell them, if you have a problem, here's my card, call me. I don't know what transpired. We could sit the patient down and ask her what transpired and what didn't transpire, but it's neither here nor there. It's he said, she said. But if you're not getting communication through Walmart or direct communication with patients who have problems, this stuff comes up all the time. Okay, and we have goofy stuff like this that comes up all the time. And it could have been solved easily by you talking to the patient, please come in, I won't charge you, let me take a look at this again, and blah, blah, blah. So there may be a communication breakdown in your office between your patients and you because of your situation, and I'm now working in your situation too, so I understand what's happening, but it's still your responsibility as the doctor. And, you know, the patient is of utmost importance as the public is in front of this board.
Any further discussion?
And that's it.
Okay.
Okay. Hearing none, we'll vote on the matter. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Lamb?
Yes.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. It's unanimous. Thank you very much, both of you. And you're free to go.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, we're going on to number 5.
Which one's that?
Catherine Hollenbach, OD, IR number 202-004.
Such a good one. Dr. Hollenbeck comes in on the later end of this, but a patient was seen by one of her associate doctors.
Dr. Hello?
Hello? Are you there?
Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
We can hear you.
Yeah.
We're talking. We'll be with you in a second.
So, Dr. Hollenbeck, a patient was seen, CW, is that what it is? No.
Yes.
CW? Okay. Patient CW was seen on September 21st by Dr. Hoffer and given a prescription for eyeglasses. She filled the prescription, it paralyzed Paradise Valley Eye Care, she could not see out of the prescription, they refunded her money and reimbursed her for the glasses. Unfortunately, nobody paid much attention other than that. And on June 17th of the following year, which is, 9 months later, the patient purchased a new pair of glasses from a different optical, but unfortunately used the prescription given to her by Dr. Hoffert. Dr. Hoffert's prescription is a sign change error. It was written in plus instead of minus, or minus instead of plus, and I can tell you that. But basically, again, the glasses did not work because there's a 5-diopter difference in the prescription, and the patient was unable to get back the money for her lenses. Patient did then see Dr. Hollenbeck, who saw the problem immediately and said, oh, we put a plus instead of a minus, or a minus instead of a plus, I have to review that again, and wrote the
minus instead of plus.
Okay, thank you. wrote the prescription, I believe, correctly, and that solved that issue. However, the patient's out 50% on the lenses. I believe then, was she charged for that second visit, Dr. Holland?
I don't believe so.
No? Okay.
But if you're done, is that your summary?
That's it.
Dr. Hollenbach, you are free to give us your account of what happened.
Basically, just what you just so she came in, did see me the year before, and somehow, and I don't know how this happened, I've never seen her before. She, you know, she had an exam, they printed it wrong. I don't know how it printed it, mine is when it was a plus, but that's what happened. And so she got her glasses made through Paradise Valley Eye Care. Of course, it wasn't working out because they printed a prescription, and she was very upset that the glasses were so off. And of course they were. There was supposed to be a plus three with still, and it was made as a minus three with a still. And so Dr. Rios refunded her money, even offered to make her a free pair because she was so upset. But she did, she had it and said, I'll just take my prescription. And then months later, which is this year now, she gets a prescription filled at an optical shop. Not our optical, another place, and of course she has the wrong prescription. I feel bad for her that she had the wrong prescription, but I didn't print that. It had nothing to do with any of that. It was just a clerical error. And then now she's upset with the optical shop because the glasses aren't working. So she comes back to Paradise Valley Eye Care, but refuses to see Dr. Hopper because she got her prescription wrong and instead sees me through Scottsdale Eye Care. Doesn't want to. Doesn't want anything to do with Paradise Valley Eye Care. And Dr. Hopper was there where she could have seen her, but I got lucky. I got to be the lucky doctor who she's going to see me. And so I opened up her chart, and I looked at her prescription, and I was very nice to her. I spent like 45 minutes with her, and I can usually move things out with people, but she was just so angry from the get-go. And I opened the chart, and I was so happy. I said, oh, wow, this is a very easy fix. I said, look on your chart. It says plus, and the prescription's printed minus. So the two places have been, you know, making prescriptions often incorrect, prescriptions. I said, this is so easy to fix, and that she was already there, and she actually wanted to pay for that exam because it was almost a year later, and it was through a different doctor, different office. That was not the problem. And so I said, well, while you're here, why don't I go ahead and check your prescription if you want? And she said, yeah, please do, you know. And so I checked her prescription and came up with something slightly different from what Dr. Hopper did, nothing crazy, but the obvious problem was that it was just printed wrong. So I tried to over and over to explain that to her, just, you know, I don't know why, you know. And also, I have nothing to do with that. I never did her exam. This is the first time I ever met her. And I did fix the problem, which, you know, anybody could have fixed. It was so easy. I don't know why an optician didn't catch that beforehand, but nevertheless, you know, and I, you know, went over, like, I spent a good 45 minutes with her trying to, you know, make her happy. I'm very nice to people. I don't ever get rude or snappy, you know, and I really thought that she would understand that it's just, that was just what the error was. But anyway, she was upset because she said that, well, what if they don't refund my money?
Which they didn't.
At the other optical shop. Well, we did that Paradise Valley Eye Care. That was a while ago. That was last year.
Right,
but
I mean,
the new place that she took her prescription to, but that?
She's out 50%, which is why she's filing the complaint.
Yeah, and she said, well, what if they don't refund my money or redo the lenses? And I said, well, I said, I don't know what their policies are. They're a completely different company. I can't dictate, but I feel like every place that I've ever known of, they always redo the lenses for at no charge with a doctor's change. But that's how we do it here. And I've heard of people going to the Costco and places, and they always redo it without a charge if you make a doctor's change. But I did say several times, I said, but again, you know, that their office is a whole separate office. I don't know what their policies are, so I'm not sure what they're going to do. But I will give you the correct prescription, which I think is fixing her problem, you know. And then also I get this complaint, which just seems so, you know, it just seems so, I was really caught off guard by a complaint like this. That's where it stands.
Yeah, do you have any questions
for Dr. Hollenbach?
Any other questions? Because I view this as a
communication breakdown.
Well, it shouldn't have been brought against Dr. Holland.
Right.
Hollenbach at all.
In other words, it should be Dr. Hopper to anybody, and it's not. So we dismiss.
So do I do this as a two-pronged thing, or like dismiss and then go back, or do I do it all at once?
You mean something about Dr. Hopper? You want? Can he do that? we dismissed the complaint against Dr. Hollenbach.
Because she didn't do it. She did the second exam. She didn't.
Well, no, I know, but I mean.
She didn't do the error of.
She's not on trial.
That's not the point.
Your motion could be to dismiss.
There's no complaint against her.
Right.
No, but once the records are open, we can see, anything.
Right. So the board could vote to dismiss and open a complaint against Dr. Hoffer.
Yeah, that's what you're going to have to do.
That's what I asked.
But it's a key punch error.
Right. So, Dr. Krasilagas, members of the board, your first motion would be to resolve the matter that's pending against Dr. Hollenbach that's present today that you heard. If you think that the evidence before you rises to the level that there should be a complaint opened against the Dr. Hoffer, the original doctor who saw the patient and then that prescription was issued, it seems like a clerical error. If you think that rises to the level of something that you would wish to investigate, the board does have the authority to open up a complaint against that doctor. That would be your decision.
Well, I move we dismiss the complaint against Dr. Hollenbach due to lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor, Dr. Jones, we'll vote. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
And Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Lamb.
Yes.
Dr. Mastores.
Aye.
I vote aye. It's unanimous. Dr. Hollenbach is
dismissed.
Dismissed. You can hang up. Thank you for listening in.
Thanks, Kathy.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. I'm sorry about the earlier noise.
Oh, no worries.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So before we move on, I mean, there's a... But looking at it from the patient's standpoint...
Oh, no. But that was our last case.
But what I'm saying is, she was given the wrong.
Haven't you ever done this?
But
everybody's done this.
But when it came in from the lab,
right?
You
would think they would. Yeah.
So all I'm saying is the patient's caught there, and I thought I was told that I couldn't put all this stuff at the bottom of the prescription pad.
Oh, what's the?
Remakes and responsibility out to fill the prescription first with an out-of-the-person compensation for prescription remakes. Rechecks are provided free of charge. Accuracy of the prescription is warranted for 100 days. I mean, the first two are obvious. The first two are obvious. The last two, though, we're not supposed to put anything on there about who does remakes. Is that part of Stark, or is that part of to where we can't basically tell people, infer to them that if someone else makes these wrong, we're not responsible? Because that's telling them that they should get them from us. They shouldn't get them anywhere else. You're not supposed to have that on a prescription pad.
Well, then why don't we open a complaint against Rios and McCall, everybody?
That's what would happen. I mean, that's not the record that's in front of me.
So your point is, Mr. President,
that should be changed if indeed this board feels that that's a violation of the way they should have it.
Well, pick the law that it violates. Because I don't know it. Margaret.
R421306.
Thank you.
What is it
looking for? I've been looking in here.
It's in rule.
It's a rule.
So it's almost on the
page two.
Second to last page or third. It's not that far.
Oh, man. I didn't even get to this yet.
By the way, since you're here today, you still have to read all of this.
All this tiny stuff?
Well, you got to read it all.
I need a magnet.
Did you say
R what?
21306.
R-421-3 of release.
It's on page 12 of the rules.
Yeah, I got it. Supplement 19-1. Name, refractive power, printed name, office date. Does it say what shouldn't be on there?
No, but that's not how the law works. If it's not in here, it's not an acceptable practice. And this has come before the board previously.
It has? What did we do?
It was a violation at that
time.
Totally
cut it out.
So who are we going to violate?
Printed name also because that's something that you can't read.
So do we violate all the doctors on the top of the pad?
That's not what we're saying. We're saying that you would assume that if one doctor is found in violation, they have to change their prescription pad, that they would do it all of them. I mean, they would just change it for the entire practice. It's not up to me to what they do.
Well, how do we tell them that? You're going to send them?
Because the complaint's against one person. Meaning, if we have the doctor back and find her in violation, you don't think she's going to go back and say we have to change this?
So you want to see Hoffer, okay?
I don't necessarily want to see her. I want to...
start a complaint against her.
unless you don't think it's a problem.
Well, I mean, then everybody's going to put this on there.
Well, that's what I mean. How can you do one and not all of them?
What I'm saying is, she said that, she sees that, and she sees that, we're going to go back and change ours.
Yeah.
Put the same thing on there. Now, I'm not responsible if you get these made somewhere and they're wrong.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Oh.
From just one key punch.
Do you have it on yours?
No. Nothing on the bottom line.
Yeah.
I was told it was not right to do
that. See?
But see, it's printed big.
Barbara, can you repeat what you're looking at, the statute that you're looking at?
Sure, Dr. Moffitt. It's R4-21-306. It's in rule and not statute, so
it's way in the
towards
back.
The end of the book.
It's in the second to the last page, or third to the last.
Well, she has
last.
A different. She's
oh,
got the
that's right. One. Does she have rules even in front of her?
Yes.
She does?
Yeah.
The name. R421306. I agree with you that we need to fix this. I just, so you want to open a complaint against Dr. Hoffert alone, have her.
On the basis of record keeping?
Except
the violation of the prescription standards.
But there's nothing in the prescription standards that says it can't, is there?
Right, it says that a licensee shall ensure that optometric prescription written by the licensee includes, so it says what needs to be on it.
But it doesn't say what can and cannot be on.
A licensee shall not, and it talks at the very end of E.
In E, a licensee shall not.
Required payment.
No, interpretation. In other words, there is nothing that says you can't put that on there. So is that a violation of the prescription? Because all the other stuff is on there. In other words, Dr. Hoffert's prescription has the requirements listed in B1 and A, B, C, D, or whatever it is. Then she just has additional crap on there that we want to take, that should be taken off. But it's not really a violation of that.
I would have to ask the AG for.
Well, that's what your statute says. It shall include this. It doesn't say what's
what
prohibited.
It shall not, right.
Right.
That's the problem. How is that a violation then?
What? How did you do this in the past?
Yeah. I
it's
don't know.
Because I know it's a violation. I mean, we've done it before.
But then you would have to find it in a different section of the law. That you find that this doesn't meet standards, or in another way, it just it doesn't meet
the
standards of the law.
Since Margaret doesn't have it at her fingertips like she always does, do you want to table this and then do the complaint for the next meeting in this regard? If you got, I mean,
I do not want to do the complaint today if I don't have the.
Well, we can't. All
I'm just saying there is no violation of the law.
Right.
That they put that on there, even though they aren't supposed to be putting that on there. What law does it violate? Because we can't open a complaint.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
It's in dispensing.
Well, we need to find something else, though.
It's on here. I don't. If you go to B and you look at number 4, right, it says, a licensee shall ensure that the optometric prescription written by the licensee includes 4 additional information that the licensee considers necessary. So,
yeah.
Well, that's going to be like match-based curves,
right.
You know, things like
well,
that.
Well, but okay, but maybe she's got a point. Additional information to the licensee considers necessary. We consider it not necessary or a violation. So maybe she does R421306 B4. Maybe that's the violation because it isn't B1.
No.
So, do you think so, Assistant AG? The B4, because it says, I understand what John just said. Additional information licensee considers necessary. So, if
right.
you want to put the PD on there, like we had that big problem, you can do that. If you want to put, I don't care, glare, no, anti-glare, whatever. But in this case, the stuff that's written on that prescription shouldn't be there. Is that, you think
is
that qualifies, Mona?
I think that you have to make a decision about whether or not, because this is not particularly agendized, this discussion, I think we've kind of crossed over.
Well, I just want to come up with a complaint reason. We
well,
can go
is it a federal?
Yeah, he said something about the
start
of
that law.
I don't know anything about that.
Is that part of Eyeglass 1 or Eyeglass 2?
I think that your rule states what has to be on there. It gives some discretion to the doctor. And
I'm not sure if it's Stark.
I think it might be federal as part Eyeglass 1 or Eyeglass 2.
It's something that came up, I know, from the dispensing opticians as well. And I think that's how it started when we initially. And I have to do some research as far as
you
but my only comment was this is not on the agenda,
right.
And we've gone a little bit too far. We need to make a decision about whether or not you're going to open a complaint.
Well, we want to open a complaint, but we need a violation.
That's true.
Well, you guys got to tell us what.
So I have a question. Can we? I know we're off on the tangent.
Right.
Can we not to table this until we determine whether there is a federal? I mean, I think we've determined there's really nothing here except if we go off on four. If there is a federal mandate through Eyeglasses 1 or Eyeglasses 2 that prohibit that to be on a prescription, we just didn't put into our statutes, but it's a federal law.
Well, I think what you have before you is a complaint by a patient regarding what happened with the prescription, that there was an error in the first prescription, and that's what's before you on the complaint.
But we dismissed that, didn't we not?
Yes.
You dismissed
okay.
it against
so
the
So now what we're discussing is should we, because of this, can we institute a new complaint? And if we do, what does it violate? And I move we table this so that we can review the laws, the Stark Amendments, Eyeglass 1, Eyeglass 2, to see if indeed this is a violation, because we don't have a complaint otherwise. We only have the law
right.
to go on.
Exactly.
Our law is not very
So good. Is that so judicially acceptable?
I think that you guys, you're off on another tangent. I mean, if that's something that you want to have a general discussion on the board, then you can direct your executive director to put that on the agenda.
Okay.
But what you're dealing with is another doctor that dealt with an issue. There's an error in issuing that in that original prescription. I mean, those are the facts before you.
True.
You have these same facts before you with this doctor on the phone. So
yeah.
I just think we
dismissed that. We should have then maybe discuss that with Dr. Holland then?
What I'm saying though is that we...
Okay, we're off track. Okay, right. So we need to, this is beyond the scope of the agenda, I'm sorry.
Is
Dr.
Instruct our
employed by Dr. Hollenbach? Is that why they put it on Hollenbach not?
No, Hollenbach's an independent.
But they all work in the same office. Just so happens she didn't want to see her when she went back for the check, so they gave her Dr. Hollenbach.
Why don't you direct our ED to earn that big salary?
I don't want to do it right now because she's mad we went off track. So
I could do it because Mona's always mad at me. So.
I think we need to make a decision here on if you want to open up a complaint against the first doctor that is before the board now. And then if this is a novel issue that you want to have addressed, then we can put on the agenda.
Okay.
Then under open meeting law, we'll have the proper authority to be able to discuss it.
Okay. Can
That's
I ask one more question
real quick?
Is the board allowed to say, to send out a directive at some point in time, saying to all members that in view of recent...
Okay, I think that possibly you could,
okay.
but I don't
That's
know.
That's all I need
that,
to know.
Yeah.
Fine, we're done.
Okay.
Good, what's next?
Item number one, Timothy Bradshaw, OD, IR number 201908.
It might be 2 o'clock.
Bradshaw.
I got this one.
This one isn't.
It's not bad. It's
go ahead, Doris.
Patient DM is saying that the doctor did duplicate claims at the visit and that she didn't feel like that should have been billed, even though it was two separate. A little bit more, but there was two claims for the same thing, and two different doctors, and that she didn't think that her co-pays were posted to her account, so she felt she was being billed unnecessarily.
But they were, right? According to this, they were.
Yeah, they were. So that's the patient's side.
Yeah, but basically,
there's one co-pay that she makes a report of a $20 co-pay at the initial visit that she says is not posted, and then the doctor says was never made.
But I thought that
there's also no receipt shown for a $20 copay
but
ever made.
Isn't the copay 40? I mean 20, and they did it twice at the second visit. I could be wrong about that, but isn't
it
that?
Doesn't say anything like that.
It doesn't say it, but what
it
I'm saying is
there was a $20 copay and then two $40 copays are actually shown. The doctor, in his response, says the copay. She does say, let me see in this letter, on June 25th, that copay of $20 was not posted to her account. The doctor, in his accounting, shows that there was no $20 copay made, and then the two $40 copays. And I think maybe that depends on insurance, what was initially right. expected to be used at the first visit versus subsequent, maybe vision versus medical, I don't know. However, then the two $40 copays are shown in the accounting.
Right, I agree. And basically, I don't understand why this complaint is against the optometrist, because the patient's complaining that the pests were repeated, and an MD can repeat.
But even so, going back 2 months later for another OCT,
you would repeat it, yeah. But
technically, that's insurance problem. I mean, I can't bill it twice; they won't pay me. But that's
But he can. He's a.
I have a comment also about the OCT and the pachymetry measurements. That the second OCT, so the first one done, so I don't see anything that was done incorrectly here by Dr. Bradshaw. The first OCT, however, did have a signal strength on the left eye of a 5 out of 10. At a subsequent visit, I might have repeated that also, trying to get a better image. And so if the patient, I guess patient's not listening, but if the patient were there, I would tell them that that's also a test I would repeat.
Sure.
And then the pachymetry measurement, I don't know that I would have repeated someone else's pachymetry measurements, but you can make an argument that depending on where you touch the cornea and who does the pachymetry measurements, whether it's the technician, if at the subsequent visit the glaucoma specialist wants to check him himself so that he gets on center cornea, those are all legitimate arguments for a repeat.
Yeah, but basically,
so
she saw
I don't see anything wrong with repeating them. And of course, Dr. Bradshaw has nothing to do with what Dr. Horsley decides he wants to do.
Yeah, I moved her.
Right, but the patient's only confused because she went to one office.
Right, she went to one office.
She sees all this.
Two doctors,
yes.
But I don't see anything wrong with
it. I move to dismiss.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Is that a second?
I can't second.
Any further discussion?
Who seconded? Dr.
Bradshaw. Any further discussion?
She ought to be after Horsley, if anybody.
Vote. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Lamb?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. It's unanimous. There's no violation. Number three, Jeffrey Olson, OD, IR number 202002.
Somebody else just does it.
The creepy crawl? You don't like the creepy crawl?
I get lost.
Which one is that?
I get lost.
Three. Oh, I got
you
it.
Have this one?
I can't remember what I got.
I can present the case if
thank you.
Yes, yes,
go ahead.
Okay. So patient JT saw her primary care doctor initially and was prescribed a allergy medication, and her symptoms were not resolved. She followed up with Dr. Olson and had been using the allergy medication. He dismissed before the exam that it was an allergic response. Did his exam, gave her, per her report, prednisone drops and said use it, I believe, at least according to the patient, as prescribed or until it's gone, and then left the room. I think she didn't like his demeanor. It sounds like they didn't take to one another all that well, based on her report. Also at that visit, she said that he told her that she had cataract in one eye and macular degeneration in one eye. She went on to see Dr. Swinford, another OD in town, who then told her that it seems like the creepy crawly symptom was gone, but then he told her that she had some dry eye and that she had cataract in both eyes and macular degeneration in both eyes, and that her cataract should be taken out. There was some time between these visits, some months, although not a full year, I don't believe. And then she went on to see Dr. Kay, who's an ophthalmologist in town, who took out cataract and also told her she had macular degeneration in both eyes. Her concern with Dr. Olson is that I think that he misdiagnosed her, which I think obviously we need to discuss. And then also that she called back to the office and she was reassured on that phone call that the records can't be changed. And that made her suspicious that someone said something like that to her.
My concern,
Dr. Olson in his did not provide any records.
Right, so we need records.
As far as I can tell. But But he does reference the records in which he says that he also discussed dry eye with her, cataract in both eyes, and bilateral macular degeneration.
So I move we table this until we receive the records on the patient.
That will make correct. A second request. Wait, third request.
That's a motion.
That's
my motion.
Can you subpoena the
We're tabling this complaint until Dr. Olson submits records.
We have a motion and a second.
To continue to subpoena the records.
Yes, second.
Continue it.
To subpoena the records and to continue this.
Yeah, because we can't tell anything without the records.
Any discussion on this? I think not. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Lamb.
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
And I vote aye. The vote is unanimous to continue.
Okay, this, where have I seen this before?
Item 6, David Anderson, OD, IR number 202005.
Let's see.
I can present again if you'd like.
Sure.
So a complaint is from the mother, RF. Her daughter was seen for an eye exam with Dr. David Anderson. At the time of presentation, she was charged for the visit, being told that they didn't take her insurance. So she paid, I think it was $99 for the visit. And then seemingly no complaints with the doctor or the visit itself, but then later found out that the doctor's office does take her insurance. She contacted the office multiple times to try and get them to bill insurance and to refund her, minus her copay. And she was met with, I think, willingness, but it wasn't done. And they wanted her to call, and she had a hard time calling in, so she had to email back and forth. And so Dr. Anderson admits that his office could have done a better job handling that. It does look like, at the time of her complaint, 7/23/19, she had had no reimbursement, but per his note, it looked like they did reimburse her. And so I believe this has been resolved.
Yes.
However, looking at the exam notes, I do think there are some deficiencies there that the board should discuss.
Oh, no doubt. Okay, thank you for that summary.
So this woman did get her money back?
Well, according to him, now we could have.
We want to find out.
We could have staff find out if indeed she got her money back, because he said they did it. Whether she did or not, we can find that out, correct?
You'd have to continue the investigation, and then we'll bring back that information, and then the board would consider it.
Okay.
But that just requires a phone call, right? Or a receipt that somebody sent her money.
That, yeah, but.
Okay, what do you want to talk about the records there, doctor?
Are you talking to me?
Dr. Moffitt brought it up. I'll let her start. I got a list.
Dr. Moffitt? Okay. So in the records were severely lacking. Okay. There were no entering acuities. There were no intraocular pressures. Correct. There were no dilation and no drops documented. So I have serious concern about that.
This is a 14-year-old complaining of headaches, and no plan, no cycloplegia. I don't even know if that RX was given to the patient.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that Plano minus 50,
right.
Minus a quarter, minus
and
a quarter is going to do a lot
RX.
For those headaches.
Almost nothing as far as the prescription went.
It was basically pre-populated.
This rings of something else that might be going on at some point in the future. Can it be transmitted
right.
over to that?
This will have to be probably continued. You're going to get a determination, if you wish, from the patient about whether or not she was refunded.
Okay.
You'll bring it back on the next board agenda, and you can consider it in total once you have that new information is the best way to go.
Well, does that require a motion?
To
yes.
table.
Yeah,
table.
To table.
Okay,
and
I hope we table this until what?
And
Margaret contacts the
right.
patient or doctor to get proof that they were refunded the money.
And we will take it up then.
And we will.
Dr. Moffitt, I had the same stuff written down on my little sheet here.
We'll review it.
I'm sorry. And
later.
I will say that in the staff, so just as, since we're discussing this, but from Dr. Anderson, staff member April, in the last sentence from her response, it does say that they did cut a check on July 9th and it was mailed. So it does look like they attempted to reimburse the patient.
We need a copy of the canceled check, is all. I think, you know, that's
No, I would, if she talks to the patient says they got the check, that's all, I don't need to call.
Well, that's fine, so either one, I'm just saying one or the other.
Anything with the records issue? Do you want staff to request records for other random patients? I mean, how do you want to approach that?
We already got a deal with this, or you do.
It's separate, Dr. Lamb.
But isn't it the same exact complaint as, well, no, it isn't.
No, it's not.
You're right, I'm sorry.
I have a question. I do think there's a violation of the Optometric Practice Act, particularly when it comes to the standard of care. If you have a patient presenting with a complaint, a medical complaint, and an inadequate exam, I'm prepared to say that we should write a letter of concern as a minimum to him with regard to the care he offered and his documentation.
Mr. President, if you want to hold that information until
we
get everything, and then we can have all of those allegations.
I totally agree, but we may go further than that.
Did I move that we?
We may go further than a letter of concern. So I would, let's table it. I think the motion was to table.
I made the motion, but I don't think there was a
discussion.
Second.
No, seconded.
I think it was seconded. Nobody had said that Dr. Krasaitis just did.
Okay.
I thought Dr. Krasaitis did.
I just get so confused.
You heard up here.
That's why you're the president.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
we have a motion to table to obtain further information from the patient or doctor for confirmation that the refund was made.
I don't think I want to pile on right now and go for any more records. Let's just do that.
Right. Okay.
So any further discussion?
Did you make the second?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. So we had discussion. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Sorry. No.
I can't do that anymore. We'll vote. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Lamb?
Aye.
Dr. Pastoris?
Aye.
And I vote aye. It's unanimous. Thank you. Moving on, item E, review, discussion, and possible vote on action on self-report pursuant to criminal charges, mandatory reporting, number 7, Taylor G. Thompson. And I have a question.
Mona has to answer.
Exactly.
Maybe we would have your executive director. You did some follow-up with the attorney, and you requested that the attorney file supplemental information. Did he do that?
No.
Is this, okay, first off, this is a very grievous complaint. Okay?
Yeah.
And we have an attorney representing the doctor and self-reporting the grievous complaint. And then our great legal system has dismissed everything without anything. Can we get what's going on through the courts? Because I have no idea. It's just like, well, yeah, we squashed that and we're done and goodbye.
No.
And this isn't like I changed a sign on a prescription that this guy's accused of. So what do we do from a legal standpoint?
Dr. Krasaitis, members of the board, this was dismissed without prejudice. So that means that the county attorney has the authority to recharge this doctor. And your executive director followed up with the attorney for additional information. The attorney has not provided any additional information.
And they were invited to appear today.
So there's still the possibility that these charges can be brought forward. And if you would like any additional advice, maybe we could go into, you may want to go into executive session.
I think we need to.
For advice into.
I think we need to, because
review confidential.
We're at a loss.
Well, this was also just to decide whether or not the board wants to open a complaint against the doctor.
Right.
Well, but can I? There's no charge.
Yeah, you could open up the complaint.
Well, yes, okay. Because it could still be.
And we can get additional information.
So that, I mean, if you wanted to wait for legal advice, then not until the next.
Can I make a motion we go into executive session? Or is that a proclamation?
No, you'd have to make a motion. There'd have to be a second. And then we're going to have to get Dr. Moffitt on the phone.
Yeah, I already have it arranged.
How to do that? We'll have to go to
I make that motion. It was seconded. Any discussion on that motion?
I will second that motion.
We already have a second.
Oh, okay. Darcy.
Okay.
Okay. And then let's. And then we'll need a roll call.
Okay.
A roll call on the motion.
I've been doing roll calls all day.
Right.
Dr. Jones.
Hi.
Dr. Moffitt.
Yes.
Dr. Lamb.
Yes.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
I also vote yes.
All right, and then may we have like a 5-minute break?
Sure.
Before the executive session?
Sure we can.
Okay, thank you.
Because that's what I asked. Mm-hmm.